Listen to today's Peace Almanac entry at peacealmanac.org. All past shows can be heard at talkworldradio.org. Talk World Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way.
You are listening to FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And I am Angela McLaughlin. You are listening to the Peace and Social Justice Show. And we have some great folks on today who are making change in the community. So I'm excited to jump into it. We'll take care of a little business, and then we're going to get right in. So it's important to note the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, or volunteers. Peace and Social Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Pure Clean Carpet and Tile Care, featuring eco-friendly, soap-free detergents to restore most flooring products. Pure Clean also cleans upholstery, tile, grout, and laminates, and they are a locally owned small business. Pure Clean Services, Chico, Orland, Willows, and The Ridge. Details, testimonials, and appointments at purecleanchico.com, or you can call them at 530-715-1232. And by DK Web Design, providing digital marketing services to improve your business's online presence, including websites, social media management, and search engine organization. Optimization, that's an important distinction. In 2012, owner Danielle Vogel started DK as a way to give back to the community by helping other organizations reach their full potential. Details to maximize your web presence are available at DK Web Design, or you can reach them on the phone at 530-809-4989. Okay, we are going to jump right in.
It's time for the KZFR 90.1 FM Community Calendar with me, Mark Baker. Today, the Community Action Agency of Butte County North State Food Bank will hold a food distribution event for Palermo at the Palermo Grange, located at 7600 Irwin Avenue in Oroville. The distribution begins at 10 a.m. and goes until noon or until supplies run out. The effort is conducted at no cost to those attending. Anyone attending should be in a vehicle and follow the traffic flow guides. Participants are requested to please remain in their vehicles. Boxes weighing between 17 and 22 pounds will be placed by volunteers into vehicles attending. The food boxes include healthy, shelf-stable, and perishable foods, depending on seasonal availability. The Community Action Agency of Butte County North State Food Bank food distribution event will take place from 10 a.m. until noon at the Palermo Grange, located at 7600 Irwin Avenue in Oroville. And on Saturday, the 4th Annual Chico Spring Clean Day will be held at Hooker Oak Park from 9 a.m. to noon. Volunteers can choose an area or park they want to clean up and pick up supplies at Hooker Oak Park starting at 8:30 a.m. Schools, churches, and community groups can sign up together to clean up on Earth Day weekend. A volunteer appreciation barbecue will begin at 11:30 a.m. at Hooker Oak Park to show appreciation for keeping our community clean. To sign up or for more information, visit chico.ca.us or call 530-896-7831. The 4th Annual Chico Spring Clean Day will take place from 9 a.m. to noon at Hooker Oak Park, located at 1928 Manzanita Avenue in Chico. If you have an event you would like to hear on the community calendar, please let us know by sending an email to cc@kzfr.org. This is the KZFR 90.1 FM Community Calendar.
My guest today is Rich Ober, founder of the South Chico Community Assistance Center. For those unfamiliar with the center, their mission statement reads, "The South Chico Community Assistance Center works within the community to alleviate hunger and provide referral services. We advocate for environmental, economic, and social justice.
We promote the health, well-being, and dignity of everyone living in our community, regardless of income or housing status. Thanks so much for joining me, Rich.
Thank you. I'm glad to be with you this morning.
Yeah, I've been, we've talked about it before. I've been a big fan of the work you're doing for a while. Can you take a moment to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background?
Absolutely. Thank you. And thanks for that comment. I appreciate that. Yeah. So my friend John and I founded the South Chico Community Assistance Center about 3 years ago. At the time, really kind of during the pandemic, we were working hard in the the more visible encampments for unhoused folks to try to keep people safe and just provide the kind of minimal services that we were able to provide as just private citizens. So we were hauling trash and delivering food and water and doing the kind of work that a lot of people in the community stepped up to do. And while we were doing that, we kind of had an epiphany. We sort of looked at each other and said, maybe this is something that we could be doing, on a more, concerted, focused way. And so we hatched the idea of the South Chico Community Assistance Center. And, as a quick, note, we realized that that's a very long name for, an organization. And so most people just refer to us as the center. And so we wanted to focus primarily on, food and housing insecurity. One of the kind of the ways we describe what we do is to say that we, are trying to help people get through the last week of the month. And by that we kind of mean that we understand, that people make choices as they go through the month and as funds run low between, paying rent, buying medicine, buying clothes for kids to get them off to school and buying food. And when you're forced with or faced with making those kinds of choices, all kinds of other, challenges crop up. And so, we, like many other organizations in town, are trying to make it, make it a little bit easier to make those choices, or maybe in some cases make it so that you don't have to make those choices. In the case of people who are housed, which about probably 75% to 80% of the people who we serve are housed, then, you provide a situation you help, to provide a situation where those folks can stay housed. That of course is key. And for those who are unhoused, what we're hoping that we're doing is, providing a little bit of respite, a little bit of, stability, in order for, those folks to, face perhaps a little bit less of a challenge and, find a bit of stability that we hope, of course, as all service providers do, will lead to, getting back housed, stabilized, able to, start to on a path that's healthier. So that's the mission. That's the work we're trying to do.
Yeah. And why South Chico in particular?
Yeah, one of the things that we recognized, again, going back to those days that we all remember when, during the pandemic, when the shelter in place order from the CDC came out and these encampments became visible, most of them were concentrated in South Chico.
Our services, curiously.
That's very true. I think, South Chico has historically been, underrepresented in local, government. It's been, where both services and, frankly, the greatest need, has been in Chico. And so it was important to us to acknowledge that in the name of the organization to at least, rhetorically, acknowledge that South Chico is a unique part of town, and historically has had some of the greatest need. All of that being said, we in no way mean to imply that that's the only part of town that has needs. or that even that we focus necessarily on, you know, any particular geography. So we don't check IDs. We don't, you know, ask people to demonstrate that they're from that part of Chico or even from Chico at all. We don't do anything like that. So we serve anybody from anywhere. It felt important to acknowledge that South Chico is a unique place and a special place and near and dear to our hearts. I mean, you know, that's the part of Chico that I've lived in for, you know, 30 years. So I feel like it's a special part of town.
Yeah, it is. I completely lost my train of thought. So tell us about some of the programs that you offer, the specific programs.
Yeah. So we are primarily, but definitely not exclusively, a food and clothing pantry. So we do, and, you know, we're quite young and quite small, and we always acknowledge that there are many other people doing and organizations doing this kind of work. And we partner with them and try to coordinate as best we can so that we're not, duplicating, or where we are duplicating, it's meeting a particular need. So food and clothing, we do on the second and fourth Saturdays of the month. We have our open pantry days, and we set our space up. We're located at 1805 Park Avenue. And it's a very small building. We set up, our pantry, our food and clothing pantries, kind of like a small shop, like a small store. So people come in and, they shop our shelves. They shop our clothing racks and take what they need, don't take what they don't need. We have a really strong and growing volunteer base. So we'll have, you know, upwards of 10 people helping, folks, kind of navigate the lines. We get our, non-perishable foods, you know, canned vegetables and, you know, pasta and things like that, primarily from the North State Food Bank in Oroville. We get, a lot of amazing fresh organic produce from, Grub Farms. They're an incredibly valued partner of ours. So we'll have every open pantry will have, mounds and mounds of amazing produce. And then we have a small budget that we use every month to stock our, fridges and freezers with, you know, chicken breasts and cheese and eggs and butter and other perishable food, that we then obviously distribute. So that's our food and clothing part of our operation. And then we have volunteers who will, do some advocacy work. We always interact pretty in depth with the folks who are coming through the door to try to understand what their situation is and see if there are any other special needs and then do referral services based on that. That's a part of our program that we definitely need to grow. We want to do more of that kind of work to get people connected with other services that will meet the kinds of needs that we're not particularly equipped to meet. And then the other thing that's really important that we do out of the center is we're part of the Butte County Resilience Collaborative. So we are doing work related and probably many listeners aren't familiar with the concept of a resilience center or resilience hub. But that idea is to coordinate among various service providers, both governmental and non-governmental. So nonprofits like us and, you know, the Butte County and the City of Chico and CARD and to coordinate and understand and communicate what everyone is doing in the way of providing these kinds of services so that specifically in the case of a resilience center, so that when a disaster happens, which obviously we have lived through, all of these agencies that are doing this work, kind of on a perhaps a fairly small scale, can scale up to meet that demand, and so that that infrastructure is already in place when the need suddenly goes from, you know, 2 to 10.
Right.
And so that resilience work is really important. And it all goes back to the idea of, you know, keeping people safe, healthy, and respond to need, whether it's, you know, day-to-day need, like we're doing just, you know, by ourselves, or whether it's suddenly a, you know, need that's in response to a crisis. So that's work that happens out of the center as well.
Wow. And, speaking of partnerships, on days that you have food pantry, I think I also read that you work with an organization that provides hot meals.
We do. Yeah. There's a great organization called Chico Red Meals, and they've been in existence for quite a while. And their mission is to keep people fed, essentially, and to provide good, healthy, meals, to people who are, you know, who aren't getting that otherwise. And so they approached us fairly early on and realized that, you know, we have on our open pantry days, we have, lately, on average, probably 140, folks who come through the doors. And that means, you know, that's 140 people who are both, you know, getting some groceries and perhaps getting some clothing and things from us, but, in all likelihood are facing other kinds of issues too. So Chico Red Meals sets up, their kind of mobile kitchen, if you will, at our location at Park Avenue, and serves hot meals to people who, you know, who are coming through the line.
Wow. And
probably, you know, 75 to 80% of the people who come through our line make their way, over to the Red Meals folks, and they, you know, they serve spaghetti and salad and, you know, often some kind of soup, and, you know, it's really good, really, really healthy food. And one of the things that's really cool about that is, and we've heard this from, you know, from our clients, you know, regularly, is that by not only coming to get, you know, a bag of groceries and some produce and whatnot, by then being able to go over to a place to sit down, and have a meal and sit with, you know, with other people who are doing the same thing, it really has resulted, and this was kind of unexpected, I think. It wasn't necessarily our plan, but it's a delightful outcome that it's created a sense of community. So
We
have people who didn't know each other before coming from various parts of town, from out of town. We have people who come from, you know, Orland and to shop our shelves, who then spend a little bit of time talking to each other and learning each other's stories. And all of this, ultimately results, we hope and we sense in a heightened sense of dignity. So that these people, and us too, we all feel like we're part of a, you know, a bigger community that's working together just to try to, you know, to stay, you know, stay healthy and happy. And to the extent that that happens, it's really wonderful thing to see.
Yeah. And so, another partner, but I'm not actually sure if they're a partner with you. I've just seen that they seem to be operating out of the same space. NorCal Resist, do you work with them? I've seen that they have events like bicycle repair days or brake light repair days.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. So I would describe them as a partner, or at least that, you know, when, you know, mission aligns, where that's part of the community center, part of our mission and our name is that, we want to make sure that this is space that the community can use. Again, it's a very small space, but, we make the most of it, and, that it can be used by other agencies, other organizations that are, you know, kind of mission aligned. NorCal Resist is certainly one of those. So yes, they have done, you know, brake light, clinics and bike repair, you know, clinics, and they've done that work. It's very similar to the Red Meals folks, so that, you know, you've got a population, you've got people who are coming to have, you know, one set of needs met, like, you know, getting groceries and whatnot, who perhaps have overlapping needs. And the brake light clinic is really cool because one of the things that, can kind of land people in jeopardy is, literally if your brake lights aren't working, then you get a citation of some sort that means that you aren't going to be able to use your car because until you get a repair and the repair is expensive and that, you know, all of these things when you're facing, when you're in some degree of poverty means, you know, they start to snowball. So, you know, if I have to also make the choice of do I get my car fixed or do I buy food? And,
Do I pay the fine?
Or do I pay the fine? Exactly. Right. And so these are choices that often are, you know, incredibly hard. And if you're literally making a choice between doing one thing or another, then that thing that you choose, that you have to choose to not do means that the problem, you know, compounds and potentially, you know, snowballs over time. So, NorCal Resist doing those kinds of clinics, helping out the folks who are, you know, coming through our line, it's part of that grander scheme of keeping people, you know, stable and, you know, like our little catchphrase, you know, keep people.
Hi, Ray Lager here, underwriting director at KZFR. Since 1990, KZFR has been offering an alternative to commercial radio's endless commercials and corporate influences. Our mission is to enlighten, educate, entertain, and inform. By having your business or organization represented on the Zephyr, you will not only get your message in front of thousands of weekly listeners, but you'll also get to show your support for locally produced community-based programming. To learn about supporting community radio, please contact me at underwrite@kzfr.org or by calling or texting 530-520-4742, and let's see how KZFR can help you fulfill your mission.
In case you are just joining us, you are listening to Peace and Social Justice on KZFR. I'm Angela McLaughlin, your fourth Friday host, and we have been talking to Rich Ober of the South Chico Community Assistance Center, also known as the Center. It's a mouthful. So we're going to get back to that in just a moment. I did want to say, if you enjoy this program, please consider going to kzfr.org and tipping this show. It helps us stay on air, and it helps the station. Thanks so much. And we're going to rejoin Rich.
Yeah. And so I'm not sure if this is an ongoing program, but at some point I'd read that you had a garden or gardening program.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. Yeah, we do. We have some demonstration gardens kind of in the front of our space. It's something that we are excited to see grow and expand, but we've got some raised beds in the front. We've partnered with, some folks from Butte Environmental Council and from, other people who are advocating for doing, home and community gardening. And the idea is to provide a space where, we can do small workshops. We can, you know, describe to people, you know, the kinds of materials that you use, the kinds of plants that work well. And so we've hosted a number of those events. And our gardens are, you know, of a scale that it's not like we're producing a whole lot of food out of them, but we are hoping. So we're hoping that by, you know, doing that, we can be encouraging people, to be doing home gardening or small community gardening. And one other thing that I'll mention when we're talking about that is, another really cool thing that we've done out of the center is, basically demonstrations or classes on preparing and preserving food. So for example, we've done a couple of canning classes of, how to can food that's coming out of your own garden.
And you have a kitchen there available there that you work in?
We do. We do. The building, I describe it as a building. It's really an old historic house. It's Again, at the corner of 18th and Park Avenue, a lot of people would probably recognize it when you notice it, when you drive by.
Yeah.
It's an old historic, Chico house that, is no longer residential. So it's now in a commercial zoned, area. So it's been used as a business essentially for quite a long time. But it's still configured very much as a house. So we have, you know, multiple rooms that at one point were bedrooms, living room, you know, dining room, et cetera, and a kitchen. And we've used the kitchen for some of these classes. So we've done a cooking with scraps class, you know, how to take things that are left over from the previous day's meal and turn them into the next day's meal. And we've done canning, classes and other kinds of food, sort of demonstration things. There's also an event or a group that meets, at the center monthly, called the Climate Cafe. And they are essentially, getting together, being in community, preparing in our kitchen a meal together, and then just kind of, taking some time out from, you know, busy lives and often stressful lives, particularly in relationship to, you know, some of the climate, anxieties that we're all feeling, and just being in space to be able to say, how can we get through this together, basically. So the kitchen plays an important role in a lot of the programs that we do.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And so a few other things that I see listed, traditional ecological knowledge walks at Verbena Fields. Is that something you're partnering with tech on?
It's something that we certainly, are trying to direct our people to participate in. We aren't, we mostly just try to say, these are things that you should all be aware of and take advantage of. We're not a kind of integral, partner with them on that, but we definitely are trying to make sure that people who we're serving are also aware of those kinds of programs. Yeah.
Right. And then clothing or clothes and hygiene at North Valley Harm Reduction. Is that every Friday?
Yeah, that's every Friday. I believe the hours there are 10 a.m. to noon. They do really important work, really good work that includes, food and clothing. And so, we share resources to the extent that we can. And we, you know, it's try to make sure that people are aware of all of the various services that are available.
Out there. So how, if somebody wants to get involved, what's the best way?
Yeah, thanks for that. So we are, obviously we have a website, southchicocac.org. And there's some good information there. Probably more, frequently people, find out about us through our Facebook page. So you just search on South Chico, CAC or South Chico Community Assistance Center. Our Facebook page is very active, and we've got, links in both locations, as well as, email addresses, et cetera, for how to get in touch with us. We have we're 100% volunteer. We don't have any paid staff at all.
Oh, wow.
And so we have some really amazing, dedicated and talented volunteers who, and our board, myself and our board also are monitoring all of that. And so that when, people reach out to us through any of those channels, we can get them plugged in. We get contacted regularly. The community is fantastic, by people who are looking for volunteer opportunities or looking to, donate, to us. We get individual, donations of food and clothing pretty regularly, and most of that is triggered by our Facebook page. So I would say people should look to us there. One thing I'd be remiss if I didn't mention is that we're also partnered with the Chico Food Project. The people think of it as the Blue Bag program, so that's another really important source of food and other supplies for us. And so that they're a really important partner with us. And every other month we get a truckload of food donated by them.
Wow.
That's another really important partner. But yeah, all of those, you know, these connections that we've made have been, you know, mostly, you know, kind of fostered through Facebook mostly.
Yeah. And where does your funding come from?
That's a great question. So we've got some pretty good and reliable partners. We have a private foundation that is a supporter of ours. We mostly have, you know, just individual contributors. We have a program, and if people go to our website, again, southchicocac.org, we have a link there where people can click and do a one-time donation or sign up to be a recurring donor. And so it's a combination of individual donors and some other partners. Again, we're quite small. We're doing all of this on what I think is a pretty shoestring budget. We, you know, we're pretty good and pretty efficient taking a small amount of money and doing good work. I mentioned that the Open Pantry days are the second and fourth Saturdays, which means 2 days a month, which is nowhere near enough. And so we know that the need is much, much greater. I also mentioned, you know, we have maybe 140 people coming through our door. We know from talking to these folks that on average, there are three more people at home that are, you know, that are getting groceries onto their shelves. So that means, you know, 400 or so people every other week are.
Wow.
Or serving, which is fantastic, and we're really proud of that and happy that that number, that sounds like a pretty big number. The need is so much greater than that, though. We know that we could, if we were open every week, if we were open, you know, two or three times a week, we would still be, you know, needing that there'd be people who would be taking advantage of that. And so our push is to expand, our capacity, our food sourcing, our ability to store and, you know, and keep food and clothing and other things. And by doing that, we could double or triple the number of people that we're serving. And that's a medium range goal that we're hoping over the next, you know, year or so we can find a way to do that. That of course, you know, would mean I estimate that if we could double our current budget, we could probably triple the number of people that we serve.
Wow.
So that's where, you know, that's my pitch. That's my, people could get involved. People could go to our website and, you know, click on that button or reach out to us and, you know, write us a check. We would be able to be doing a lot more than we are right now and you know, join the network of organizations in town that are trying to address this problem.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for talking to me. Thank you so much for the work you're doing in the community. It's really, I think, as you know, it's life-changing work for a lot of folks. Is there anything that we didn't touch on that you want to visit before we log off?
No, I think we touched on all of it. And I want to say how much I appreciate, this program and KZFR and the help in getting the word out. And,
And you are listening, if you're just joining us, you are listening to Peace and Social Justice on KZFR 90.1. I'm Angela McLaughlin, the fourth Friday host. I'm going to take care of a little bit of business. But if you just were joined us in the middle of that, that was Rich Ober with the with the South Chico Community Assistance Center, talking about some of the work they're doing in the community. Next up, we're going to have Monica McDaniel. She's been an arts commissioner since, I think, 2009, Chico City Arts Commission member, and she is gearing up for a run for council as well. So we're excited to hear from her. Let's take care of a little business, and then we'll jump into that. Peace and Social Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Northern Star Mills, serving the North Valley with farm, garden, and pet supplies since 1898. Northern Star Mills offers natural and organic soil amendments and fertilizers, as well as natural and holistic pet supplies. Northern Star Mills is located in downtown Chico, right across from the Bidwell Mansion. And by Chico Hearing Aid Center, celebrating over 70 years of changing lives through better hearing. Improved hearing can help loved ones participate in more activities, become more involved, and improve their quality of life. To schedule a hearing evaluation, you can call Chico Hearing Aid Center at 530-342-8132. And let's get back to it.
My guest today is Monica McDaniel. Monica is a longtime Chico Arts Commissioner and advocate for local arts. Welcome, Monica.
Thanks, Angela. It's great to be here.
Oh, we appreciate you taking the time to come on. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background? What drew you to the Arts Commission and the work you do?
Sure. Well, I moved to Chico in the first place to study art and art history at Chico State. And so that's been my identity, what I've done the whole time, you know, that I've lived in Chico, or at least where it started. And then after I graduated college and after I was a retail sales manager at a couple of different art stores, I became a mom. And it was when my kids were small and I wasn't in the workforce that as so many serendipitous things in Chico go, Mary Gardner rode her bike by my daughter's preschool and said, "Hey, there's a spot in the Arts Commission. You should apply." And I've been with the Arts Commission ever since.
Wow. So how long have you been with the Arts Commission?
Since 2009.
Wow.
Well, yeah.
Thanks for all the work. You've really seen some changes to funding and to access.
Absolutely, yeah. The RDA used to fund not just the Art Commission, RDA.
Before we go on, what's an RDA?
The RDA was state funding for redevelopment agency funding. So that paid for things like the Our Hand sculpture and all of the art that you see in City Hall. It's with RDA funding, there was always a line item for arts and culture. And so when the new City Hall was built using those funds from the state of California, there was a demand that there had to be art inclusion. It wasn't just a choice, or it wasn't like a gifted sculpture or anything like that. The money had to be spent for art.
Wow.
And then when the RDA funding went away, that was a lot of implosion of the Arts Commission, or at least that was the excuse by conservative council.
Yeah. So talk about some of the work that you do.
Of the work I have done with the city.
The work of the Arts Commission itself. I think a lot of folks aren't necessarily aware of the Arts Commission in the first place or what it does.
Right. That sounds great. So the Arts Commission does a variety of things. Back when I first started, there was an outreach and education committee, and there was also an art and public places committee. And we used to have 15 work order line items on the Arts Commission. And so what those are is they were city or council approved tasks that the Art Commission was meant to complete. So one of those tasks, for instance, was to choose a mayor's art award. And that started with an proclamation by former mayor Ann Schwab declaring October Arts and Humanities Month. And so the Arts Commission would award outstanding artists and patrons in the city. And that's part of what we did. Another bit of our work was, we would meet monthly and we came up with a fine arts master plan, because if you have funding or do anything, you need to have direction. So the work of the Art Commission was to actually author and, create a fine arts master plan. So that way, when you see city funds or even private funds spent on art, projects, that there's some consistency to it. So in Chico, there's a consistent element that art projects are meant to reflect the watershed that Chico's on. And so, and the different waterways that are around Chico. And so that was one of the details of the Fine Arts Master Plan. And that's what the Art Commission created. So those are examples of work that we would do. We would do, feel-good events like ribbon cutting for public arts projects and things like that. And we would do, you know, we would be involved with the community. We were known as a working commission until 2014, when we lost our fine arts coordinator. We lost all of our funding, and basically we were kind of, and we were reduced from monthly meetings to quarterly meetings, which means every, you know, 4 months, and most of our work stopped. Our work plan went away, and all of the support we would give to local nonprofit arts and culture organizations, all of it went away in 2014. So the Arts Commission has just been surviving since then, and that's been my main task, is keeping people involved so that there could possibly be an Arts Commission in the future.
Yeah. So you know, that's short-sighted for so many reasons. I mean, the obvious ones, the importance of the arts, but the arts are also an important economic driver in the community. I think, was it the commission that did a study, or was it an outside organization?
It was the commission that did a study. So one of our tasks was to regularly interact with the Americans for the Arts, and the Americans for the Arts is a national organization that supports you know, different municipalities, and they offered to use their algorithm that would help to effectively measure the impact of nonprofit arts organizations into any given community. And so the Art Commission, and we did that right after we lost our coordinator, because we believed that the value of nonprofit arts organizations was getting lost. And so the Art Commission at that time allocated $5,000 to collaborate with Americans for the Arts. The Art Commission did all the work of surveying patrons to arts events, surveying arts organizations and cultural organizations. So like the Bidwell Mansion was included, and the Chico Museum was included, as well as many of the nonprofits, music venues, visual art venues, performing arts venues like the Blue Room and Chico Theater Company. And then we gave all that data to Americans for the Arts, and they were able to generate proof, like written proof, scientific proof, that at least in that year, fine arts organizations and cultural organizations brought $17 million into Chico.
Wow.
And that's from like a tourist. So imagine if you live in Gridley and you want a nice night out, maybe a date night. So you get tickets to Laxon Auditorium. You don't just go to the show. You maybe have dinner ahead of time and maybe drinks. And then maybe you go out for dessert afterwards, or maybe you spend the night in Chico, and that's an overnight stay, which feeds into our transient occupancy tax. And then maybe in the morning you'll go have breakfast and maybe do a little shopping. All that counts for what arts brings, because the arts, what brought them there, the performance was brought them there, or the show or whatever, but they spent money while they were in our community. And Chico is a cultural hub of the region. So being able to demonstrate that, not just from our suspicions and what we believe, but in black and white with a nationally recognized algorithm, made all the difference in being able to prove our point about the value of nonprofit organizations.
Yeah. So the RDA funding was eliminated by the state, correct?
Correct.
And since then, what have been some of the reasons that the city of Chico has not stepped up with funding?
So a lot of it, that the RDA went away congruent to there being a conservative council and a conservative mayor who's now the city manager, who wanted to eliminate arts. It was seen as and spoken of as frivolous spending, like feel good fluff. Mm-hmm. And the fear was that from the old city manager that Chico was on the verge of bankruptcy. And so they threw out a lot of the babies with the bathwater. They fired a lot of city staff, and the city staff is still recovering from that. And a lot of managers for different departments, not just arts, but arts was really on the chopping block because it wasn't seen as valued. And that's part of why we did the Americans for the Arts study, was to prove that there is a reason that the city needs to seed and to support organizations that then help themselves with volunteer efforts and the and their own donations and things like that. So the city hasn't been able to step up because we haven't had, we have a volunteer city staff person and we're grateful for that, but that city staff person does many other things and, they can't give the time that a dedicated arts coordinator could give to organizing the Arts Commission, organizing projects that, that commissioners could volunteer for. You know, I mean, it's not so much the city hasn't stepped up to it. It's more like it just hasn't recovered from that, implosion and the lack of meetings. Like we have a big, long Arts Commission meeting tomorrow morning with current commissioners and our current volunteer city staff to try to workshop how we can, as volunteers, help the city to step up. And that's the first time that's happened since 2014. You know, just these things take forever. You know, it's hard to believe. It's weird to think that it's been a decade and having councils that don't value arts is part of that. And so that leads to me as to why I ran when running for council. It's not just for arts and culture. It's all the things that I've learned along the way of volunteering for the city. It's the different council people that I've seen, you know, with various degrees of success and failure that informs me that I need to be the kind of candidate who listens to the public and who listens to organizations who are actually doing the work. You know, like one of the hot topic issues is about the unhoused. The unhoused population is frustrating to everybody. To some people, to like my opponent, for instance, who calls them vagrants. And so he's frustrated because he sees the unhoused population as a crime element. Other people see the unhoused population as people who are in need. There's a balance somewhere in between that where we can help people get things they need. There's organizations already doing this hard work, but there's not been a supportive council to give them the resources they need or even just to help them collaborate and work together so they can best benefit the entire community.
Yeah. So I was just about to segue into that. So you are going to be a candidate for the upcoming council election.
Yes, that's correct.
That'll be in November. What district are you in?
Yeah, I'm in District 3. District 3 is, you think of East Avenue is what transects my district. It goes to the west as far as like Cohasset. It goes to the east as far as Manzanita, so it doesn't include the park, but it does include all of the homes and area to the west of the park, of Upper Park I'm speaking of.
Yeah.
And it's north of Lower Park. And so PV wow. High School and Sierra View High School and Citrus Elementary are all in my district. Verbena Fields is in my district. Wow. So it's that part of town. A lot of single family homes are in my district, a lot of hardworking tax paying citizens. And so, you know, those are the kind of people I'll be talking to this summer.
Yeah. So you really, I mean, one of the things that I think is, I think for me personally is exciting about your candidacy is that because of your work on the Art Commission, under a variety of councils. We've had progressive majority councils and we've had conservative majority councils. We've had conservative city managers. We've seen all these funding upheavals. You've really learned to work across the table with folks from all kinds of viewpoints. And that feels like that's something we really need in the council right now. We've got such a, and we've got a 6-1 conservative majority and they've really it appears that they've worked to shut down any kind of position or even, you know, minimize and limit the ability of progressives to be heard.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's one thing that I'm excited about is to have somebody on that is used to hearing and listening to viewpoints that are diverse in the community. We do have a diverse community.
We do. And thank you for noticing that because, you know, learning to work across the table, where I first got my first taste of that was during one of the Americans for the Arts webinars. They talked about Kansas City, Kansas, and about how there was, it's Kansas City, Kansas, it's a population demographic similar to the size and, you know, amount of people in Chico. Mm-hmm. And there was always this tug of war between conservatives and progressives and conservatives. And neither side, each side would get what they wanted, but it really didn't include half of the community until they learned to work together. And then the city flourished because they recognized that they have to put down their personal political differences for the betterment of the community. And so that's where I first got that idea of, well, maybe I should reach out to people whose views are different than mine. And so I started doing that work. I remember there was a conservative council, and I reached out to Councillor Bob Evans to collaborate with Maria Phillips back when she was alive. And she was the director of Avenue 9 Gallery. And she needed to work with council. And so I reached out to him, and they sat down, and they had a miraculous talk. At the end of the day, everybody really wanted the same thing. They just kind of wanted to see it a little different. And when they were able to sit down face-to-face and talk about things, they realized that they weren't really so different. They might have a difference of perspective of how they want to achieve things, but there's always a compromise right there in the middle. And so that I am that kind of candidate who is willing to work with people who have differing views than I do for no other reason except that we all have to get along and we're better together. I'm a big fan of groupthink, and that doesn't only mean people who are thinking like I do.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I'm excited to see what you do.
Thank you.
in coming months. Are there opportunities for people to work with you or help you going forward?
Absolutely. Many hands make light work, and I have a core team of 8 people, and we've been meeting for about the last, 8 months or more, because I never really took my finger off the pulse of running. I only lost by 200 votes the last election out of 6,000 ballots cast. So wow. I've always known I wanted to run again, and I began creating my team, in early 2023. And so, now in April of 2024, we've got team members in place. And so it's exciting for me to be able to tell someone when they say, oh, I want to help in this one small way, to be able to refer them to someone who's managing that aspect of my campaign. Like if they want a door knock, that's the biggest thing I'm going to need. I've been told my opponent will have paid canvassers. So I really need people who believe in what my camp is up to really knock on doors and just to talk to people, because face-to-face is the best way to influence voters in my district. And that's the only way I really get elected, is if the voters in my district choose me. But people can give me donations. I have an ActBlue account that is up. They can make phone calls for me. They can write postcards for me. But really getting to know me, and not just picking me because they like things I've said on this radio program or anything else, but really checking out whether my values align with theirs, and then supporting that on a radiating out, fashion. And so people can, my website is still under construction, but info@MonicaForChico is where you can get a hold of that.
Is that .com or .org?
.com.
Okay.
MonicaForChico.com.
MonicaForChico.com.
Correct. Yeah.
Right.
And so we're still fine tuning the website. We're going to have a launch for my campaign in the next month or so. So we're doing a soft opening now, and I'm really accepting donations, even if they're small. I turned 55 in March. And so I'm asking for people to donate, in increments of 55, whether it's $5.50 or $55 or $500 is the max. But whatever people can give, I believe that no donation is too small. And if you give me a donation, it shows that you endorse me in a very profound way, even if it's only $5. Every little bit counts, and we need every little bit because I'm going to be outspent probably 10 to 1 by my opponent. So that's a critical element, is just having the funding to get through the campaign that we need for just some of the basics.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right. Well, we are going to be running out of time in a few minutes. Is there anything that I didn't touch on that you wanted to share?
Not that I can think of. I appreciate you letting me kind of go on and on. you know, about this. I think so much about it. Like, why do I want to do this? Because when I ran last time, people were like, why do you want to run for council? And I couldn't think of a concise, eloquent way to go, because I'm meant to, or because I'm supposed to, or, you know, because it's really not that. It's more like I just have learned leadership skills, and I've learned how to work within the auspices of city government, because not everybody can sit through those long, boring meetings. It's a skill set that I've developed, and I actually enjoy that work. And so, you know, thinking about how I can benefit the community, how I can listen to constituents and people and the needs of the community. You know, I'm still learning, you know, there's always things I can learn. I think it would be foolhardy for me to say, I have all the answers and do it my way. That is not the person I am and not the candidate I am. So yeah. I don't know if that's a good closing statement or not, but I just appreciate you giving me this time to share a little bit about myself with your listeners.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Hopefully we will talk to you again, once your campaign actually gets going.
All right. You are listening. Sorry about that. You are listening to Peace and Social Justice. We're just winding up here. And I have a request for you folks out there. One thing that I've noticed in what made me think of this was the talking to Rich about the South Chico Community Association, was that I see a lot of the same people, you know, whether it was volunteering at Safe Space or the South Chico Community Association or NorCal Resist. There's a myriad of local nonprofits, and some that are not nonprofits, some that are just folks out there trying to make sure that people have food or they have water. Or there's a ton of ways to get involved, and yet I can't even imagine that 1% of our population is involved. I mean, when I go to these places, I just tend to see the same folks over and over, volunteering with program after program. And it's unfortunate. If really 1% of our population, or gosh, 2% of our population in Chico volunteered and worked on some of these issues, it would be really meaningful change. And so I hope you'll consider it. I hope you'll look for opportunities, contact the South Chico Assistance Center, check in with Safe Space. There's just a ton of programs out there, a ton of opportunities, and so many of them are running on real shoestring budgets, and volunteers are absolutely critical. So, you know, even if it's a couple of hours a month, it can make a real difference. So thanks for listening, and we will see you next time.
Sipping whiskey by the river, living out of sight. 100 miles an hour in the fast lane. 100 miles an hour toward the light. See the curve in that river's bed. And I look at you when I see my friend. 100 miles an hour in the fast lane. 100 miles an hour to the end.